And you define samadhi is when you're just like in this really peaceful, transcendent state?
I mean it in that case metaphorically, that, right, it's the pressure of discontent and the release from the pressure of discontent. So you go on a retreat and it's evocative and thrilling and provocative, and you have some spiritual experience to write home about.
When you're not in that state, the desire to be in that state is what, is an issue.
You've already taken up arms. By presuming that you're capable of recognizing a state, then clarifying or insisting what that state is, and if pleasant, crave for more. If unpleasant, then do what's needed to mitigate.
So in some ways it does you a disservice to have ever had samadhi.
Unavoidable. Yeah. The presence of experiencing is nirvikalpa samadhi.
That's experiencing?
Yes, but we don't know what experiencing is. Do we know what experiencing is? We think we do by virtue of the stories told about myself as a creature in a realm, navigating pleasant and unpleasant.
So it's a nice thing, but it's happening to a creature.
Yeah, if it is happening to a creature, then you're in that loop of, call it, sorrow and samadhi.
If it's not happening, then what is it?
That's a good question. Yeah. Well, it's non-objectifiable. It's non-subjectifiable. It might no longer assert itself in our so-called mind as experiencing at all. It's the subtle movement of imagination and association you could say that makes this sound like or feel like experiencing. It's the movement of conceiving, which, you know, suggests or infers I. And that is, let's say, rapidly followed, you know, by I am something. So all of the restlessness of becoming floods in instantaneously because I am something.
Probably more in the aftermath than...
Well, that, yeah, that's fun. The notion of the aftermath, you could say, is the, no, maybe Paul Hederman might refer to the aftermath as the texture of selfing. The, the yoga of textural inquiry shifts one's attention from being a product of the aftermath to being preamble. Before this or you become something, you have the preamble. Which is so-called presence. Presence completely, we could say, relaxed from association.
Association with a self?
Well, any or all. See, you can't say association with a thing because that is association. Yeah. I mean, even what does self imply? Well, it implies this curious preamble that now I've taken to be a self or myself. I've anthropomorphized the preamble.
So it's kind of that, like, alpha omega kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, the aftermath is more preamble than aftermath. I don't know. I'm completely confused myself, but...
Aftermath we're using in this context as that which is found, that which is interpreted to be found. Preamble is not found. Mm-hmm. So you have a life, and it's it can suck sometimes. So we use interventions, whether it's the work or contemplative practices. To help the life unsuck.
Okay.
So you go on a retreat and you find experience. Maybe exalting experience. And you mistake it for spiritual progress, or you mistake it for relief.
Well, there's always the hope that the good stuff will last. And then you start to get hip to the trip that it doesn't ever last.
Not just it, nothing does.
Yeah, yeah. But that's kind of the false bill of goods that lures you in.
Yes, you've taken yourself to be a creature in a realm. You don't know how. You don't even know that you've done it. But you find all kinds of discomforts. And so you want to be a creature in a realm on the winning side of suffering. Which is suffering. Yeah, you want to be on the winning side. But you're too late. Because you've already mistaken the preamble to be aftermath. So the capacity of what we might refer to as mind to infer something from experiencing is what launches the, call it the hell realm of being a creature in a realm. Yeah, experiencing, which is nothing at all, preamble, has sufficiently congealed to consider itself to be a subject and or an object. And you know, I've got a million reasons to go see Eckhart Tolle once that happens, except I can't afford to.
I didn't catch your definition of preamble.
Yeah. Preamble is exactly what this is and isn't. Before you or one assigns any meaning to it. any context.
Would you refer to it as source?
At your own risk. Source, what does source do? It objectifies preamble and places it, in a before status from which everything or most things arise. But preamble is sourceless. Does this need a name? Does it benefit somehow by having a name? Do I benefit? Am I benefited by having a name, knowing, thinking I know what this is, where it came from, how it began, where it's heading? You'll see, what names do is end up contributing to hate crimes. What names do is make you feel justified in toppling the gravestones of somebody else's cemetery or rounding persons up for genocidal cleansing. That's what names do. Including lofty names like Source. We become impatient, if not justifiably hateful, where there's a difference of faith, a difference of gender, a difference of color of skin, a difference of language or custom. And that, you could say comes about through the reification of consciousness as self, and then this sense of self busies itself, belonging to affiliation groups. and that justifies exploitation and mayhem. I mean, what are we doing? Simple. Drilling for fossil fuels or burning above ground carbon for transportation and heat, energy, food production, so we can eat on the scale that we eat. Without the consumption of fossil fuels through combustion, we could never have grown enough food to feed 7.2 or 3 billion hungry mouths. So we're in a loop. A creature is conceived biologically and its first craving is breath, vital breath. Its second craving is feed me. And along the way, it seems like fun to go to a Jeannie Zandy retreat. So what might happen, as if happening is something when it's not? What unfolds in the pristine nature of awareness? As, preamble and aftermath. We ignore preamble and habituate to aftermath. Where we consume fossil fuels and eat.
Fossil fuels and fossil fuels.
Yeah, then the pressure of 7 point something billion mouths to feed on the biosphere and the capacity to harvest fossil fuels, which also includes, of course, so-called sustainable forms of energy. That's all that's happening. No, once in a while you go to a basketball game. Or you try to, help your kids when they're depressed. We make something of spirituality by, creating clever acronyms and mnemonic devices and pithy pithy references. And so we place ourselves in a context of space, time, and creature. No wonder we need to go on retreats. There's so much to be annoyed with. There's so much to be annoyed about, which I would like to think is other than myself. Like, I am the top of the food chain, the hegemony of self. So I'm annoyed with everything and everyone else. All the insecurity and codependence and fear and apprehension and attention-seeking needs. I extrovert my frustration. Then I go on a retreat, and somebody gives me the four questions and the turnaround. Or metta. Or radiant presence. Dzogchen, Kashmiri Shaivism. Spiritual 12-step work.
Don't forget good food.
Don't forget. Good food. So this is so surreptitiously simple. It's not so easy to kick the habit of the creature. I got places to go and people to see, savings to accumulate, wise investment choices to make, spreadsheets to add it all up. And if I'm concerned about the stability of the fossil fuel food in mouth predicament, well, I can put grains and beans and water and cash and apple cider vinegar in my basement. If I have a basement, if I have a lot of money, I can build a bunker somewhere in New Zealand, presuming it will be least affected by disturbing climate change. So I can survive longer than those that don't have such a bunker.
That's cheery.
Oh, yeah. And if, you know, someone wandered through the woods that might want to come live in my bunker, most likely I would keep the door locked and or shoot them if they tried to break in. That sounds like a really nice way to live. But that's what we're doing now in a, you know, geopolitical sense. Immigration, refugees, children, defenseless persons.
I just read this thing from The Guardian about this famous children's author who's, she's around 70 years old.
Yes.
Did you read that?
Just the headline.
Yeah. She came for something, some award, I think, and they just like interrogated her like for hours, and she overheard them talking cruelly to other people, like women with children, and they weren't allowed to use the bathroom, or they were like mean to them and hard.
That's a police state.
Yeah.
Here we are. The police state is alive and well, being fueled by bigoted self-interest. This is it. We're here, right in the midst of the tipping point. Where the welcoming of the Statue of Liberty has turned into a police state. Fear and loathing, xenophobia. Jobs, money, food, unfamiliar language. Where do we imagine 7-point-something billion are going to end up as the capacity to feed all those mouths is stressed out?
I just read an article that said in a few decades we're going to run out of graveyard space too.
Yeah.
I'll have to start exhuming the bodies like they do in Latin America, I guess.
Yeah, they'll have to make burial illegal or only available for the, you know, so-called mega wealthy.
Well, what they're doing in Israel is they're making high rises for dead bodies.
Nice.
Well, why do they value dead bodies so much? They don't cremate there?
I think it's not part of the Jewish religion to cremate.
Yeah, right. That needs to change too. You know, and the Pope has to get off this contraception kick. And this, you know, anti-gay kick. But this is the, you know, we're just seeing the stresses of a rather thin veneer. Of, you know, social stability.
What is all this dark, dreary, material world crap have to do with, insight, inquiry, that kind of thing?
It is insight.
What's the insight?
Good question. What's the insight into anything?
Apparently, it's a whole lot of nothing.
Apparently.
Rumor has it.
Rumor has it. Well, you see, the same involuntary anthropomorphization that has me interested in liberation speak, let's say, is the same anthropomorphization that has me, you know, behaving as a creature in a realm.
So recognize the futility of it all?
Well, futility looks like it could land somewhere. There is no...
suicide?
Not necessarily.
Depression? Alcoholism?
Those are all present. We have all those.
Reconciliation with it?
No.
Wrong!
Well, see what futility incites in you. Or what does reconciliation incite in you?
Feels like a person type of thing.
It is. Yeah. It's like having a good retreat.
Well, it's a retreat gives you a little sort of rah-rah kind of feeling, half-life kind of period afterwards.
Aftermath.
Aftermath, yes. Or futility is just sort of, you know.
Futility is just like a retreat.
I haven't seen any retreats that have emphasized futility.
Excuse me, just excuse me a moment or two.
And now with the whole state of the world thing, it used to seem so important to do something about it. Not that I ever really did all that much. You know, I sort of tried in my own way, but there's a lot less sort of arrogant self here thinking, you know, here's all the issues, here's the problems, and I need to do something. All that ever did for me was sort of reinforce the sense of a wretched self. And it almost like as Jeff describes, you know, the state of the country and the state of the world and all the issues. There's still that piece of me like, well, why don't we do something about it? But I'm just not that arrogant. I'm not arrogant enough to think that I'm supposed to do anything about it. But it's still kind of tempting.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I'm like solid.
Okay.
Here's this beautiful shocking, resolute, irresolute intimacy that knows no other. And we learn how to stand down from temptation. And I don't mean necessarily, you know, the temptation of the flesh, which is how Christianity has enslaved everybody, and of course other religions have enslaved people, right? The sin and shame associated with the seduction of the flesh. Gives a fuck. We're speaking about standing down from this incident. This is exactly liberation. This is exactly radiant presence. This is exactly freedom from time and space. This is fruition. This is preamble. That's the aching simplicity of what realization is all about. Exactly this, without thinking anything about it. Is samadhi, nirvikalpa samadhi, salvikalpa samadhi. You don't have to go into a demonstrative state or yogic rigor mortis. I mean, those are fun, you know, they happen in nature. I mean, they're thrilling in a sense. You know, they're profoundly celebratory. But they're not necessary. Here's the unassailable profundity of myself as preamble, without perceiving or conceiving. Welcome to the Ramana Maharshi theme park.
Open up one near Orlando.
You see what happens? You are looking for or toward experiencing to deliver something to you or for you or about you. By being interested in deliverables, that, well, we used the word earlier, exhumes you from your natural state. So here's this. Ain't got no words for it. But it certainly hasn't conveyed a condition. So there's no craving for explanation or to get from here to there or to have or enjoy another cathartic expression or relief from my unruly mind. You're looking or sensing at the preamble before sentient subjectivity and sentient objectivity occurs. Which is not actually before, it can't be before. That's why, you know, form is emptiness and emptiness is form. If you make the slightest sense about experiencing it, grabs you, suckers you into the imagination of a world. If you don't, make the slightest sense, it doesn't sucker you into a world.
I am constantly getting sucker punched.
Yep. Yeah, but just to be a cheerleader for the other side, you're constantly, just as constantly, not being sucker punched. Your emptiness is not compromised by the miraculous capacity to exhume the emptiness of preamble and turn it into a world. You know, we're kind of like a mad dog that grabs somebody's trouser, right, with our teeth, and we won't let go. So we bite down on that trouser leg, and we go to retreats. Just let the trousers alone. Don't bite down. That's freedom. Don't bite down. Even freedom is contrite. People that are, you know, insisting on freedom or peace or promises of some kind of religion, they've just got their teeth dug into the trouser leg. And so they remain, we remain interested in amelioration. If you're interested in amelioration, then you've already found something that's sufficiently troubling to be ameliorated from, which means your teeth are just howl, and you've created the world. And again, that's, you know, involuntary. It's not like bad dog. You know, it's, hey, look how much fun it is to grab someone's trouser leg and have them try to, you know, kick you off, throw you off. It's a lot of fun. You get to function, you know, as a hopefully succeeding member of society. You exercise and you eat right. You follow the CDC vaccination schedule on time. You obey. One day you're really proud of your kids because they knock over a bunch of gravestones. And then they go to a Ivy League school and get recruited into one cult or another, like Skull and Crossbones, and start hobnobbing with the children of wealthy billionaires that run corporations and the state. And they get an awesome, awesome job selling their soul. Then they end up with a bunker in New Zealand. Oh, I'm so looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's what every boy and girl dreams of.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I'm going to meet a neocon princess and get a bunker.
The good quality peanut butter, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's the, you know, there's the nagging sense of living a life, the nagging sense of time, the nagging sense of some kind of unsatisfactoriness or insufficiency, not enoughness, apprehension for the future, dealing with, you know, raving lunatic codependence in the office, in the family, in the extended family, in the supermarket, on TV. Even the best picture isn't safe.
Well, now nobody will ever forget that movie, you know, so, you know.
Which one?
Both of them, I guess. I don't know. Maybe. I've already forgotten, really.
Yeah. We want to be sated and validated as the creature being able to participate in a welcoming, winning life that includes whatever degree of creature comfort that we crave and the benefit of, you know, spiritual affirmation. But by doing so, we once again, a void. The unutterable beauty of this preamble, and seek our fortunes in the myth of time and space and sensation. There's two, you know, I always like to come up with two, three, or whatever. It's all nonsense, of course, but there's two paths of amelioration. One is trying to make the myth of the life work out in an optimal manner. And the other is unclench your teeth from the trousers. Which is stranger and a little more intimidating and scarier than the former. Because of that reflex of what's going to happen to me. What's in it for me? If I let go of the push and the pull and the fight and the quarrel, if I take my hands off the steering wheel of the imagination of my life, what will happen to me? So naturally, most creatures hang on to that steering wheel. They keep their teeth deeply embedded in the khaki. This is why in the the subtle Dzogchenish teachings, reveal absolute release. Cessation and nibbana being the end of contrast, the end of comparison, the end of one's insistence on having a personal biological hegemony. And, you know, to be interested in this kind of a conversation, which erases the heresy of living an individualized life, is, somewhat rarefied. This is, Oprah doesn't talk about this. John Stewart doesn't talk about it. Bill Maher doesn't talk about it. Fuck, the Dalai Lama doesn't talk about it. He's a trouser guy. Even though he wears a skirt. Ram Dass doesn't talk about it. Wayne Dyer didn't talk about it. Carolyn Meese doesn't talk about it. Marianne Williamson doesn't talk about it. The Angel Girl doesn't talk about it. However many angel girls and guys there are. Andrew Cohen didn't talk about it.
Who's making a comeback?
That's sad news. Or you could say everyone's talking about it, you know, because it's the listener that counts, not the orator. As you, as one, releases from the appetite of comparison, well, all you see is this magnificence. Which turns out to be, you know, cessation and nibbana. This is it. It's carrying on as the sovereignty, the imagined sovereignty of, you know, humans at the top of the food chain. And it, of course, carries on as unassailable.
It's kind of an improvisation.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, unfortunately, we can look to the socio and geopolitical milieu and see frightening errors in consciousness repeat themselves. Through supremacy and fascism of all kinds. So yeah, it's fresh every single moment. And yet there sure seem to be some nagging ways that people just aren't ready, willing, or interested in giving up as they defile the lives of others and head for the bunkers. You know, it's a Kondratiev wave of hysteria. Someone like, Ruth Ginsburg has seen it before, right? She's old enough to have seen it before. One can see the reflex, the reflex of inhabitation, the reflex of anthropomorphization, or the reflex of reification. You can see it. You can sense and feel it. You can see how it's operating in your own experience, the intimacy of your own experience. You're like, whoa, check this out. If you're, call it a sincere and driven aspirant, you find it fascinating. And by finding it fascinating, you could say it releases you. If you don't find it fascinating or don't notice it at all, then it can't release you. You're just a product of, you know, hysteria. You've become your own naked emperor and you don't know it. It's lovely because it's the moment. The moment one ends up with some kind of consideration, or utility, or future, or the ache and myth of becoming, then you know you've leapt back into the samsaric field. And that's cool. There's no point or utility in having a frustration or a sense of self-directed disappointment for the frequency with which we are snookered by a trouser leg. Because this is always absolutely unfettered. And so even one's assessment of the past, having been snookered so formidably for so long, is just a presently appearing imagination. So we're released from disappointment and value judgment. And why has it taken me so long to see this? Or why, after all these years of doing my best to see it, I have convinced myself that I still fail to see it? None of this is true. Yeah, if you bring life imagery to the table, then that's what you're doing, which, of course, one is welcome to do. You're bringing life imagery to the table to evaluate yourself or evaluate others and try to find an improved version of, right, bringing life to the table. Always seeking an improved version of the myth of conceiving. Why would I want an improved version of the myth of conceiving? That's like a sticky note. There is no improved version of this. There's no better way to see it or feel it or notice it or not notice it. The slightest comparison places you in a condition, and you place yourself in a condition. Simultaneously, there's value judgment associated with that condition. We bounce from value judgment to value judgment to value judgment as concerns the myth of placing ourselves in a condition which is not actually binding. And that release is always present, which turns out to be no release at all. It's truly a streaming absurdity. Hmm. One's persona and sense of oneself is a streaming absurdity. That's cool.
It's streaming. Maybe we'll run out of gigabytes.
Hmm. Exactly. Not likely. It's not made of anything. You know? Fossil fuels, that's made of something. Reality is not. Fossil fuels will run out. Reality, not. Yeah.
Well, maybe the solution to the running out of fossil fuels is, since we're going to run out of graveyards, might as well use people for fuel.
Soylent Green is people. Yeah, I mean, we've got, this is just tremendous amount of, right, you know, biomass. I don't know how easy it would be to turn, you know, right, people or animal tissue into recyclable or combustible, you know, fuel. I'm sure Elon Musk has a plan. Don't let your imagination defeat you. No, see through the implication of imagination very lightly, very lightly. No dog in the fight. Nothing on the other side of it. No pressure. Just very lightly, we see through the implication machine of one's imagination. That's realization. Of course, what realization might actually be is not, you know, describable according to human constructs or behavioral constructs or anything of that, of the kind. So, you know, you can tease it out. You can kick a can down the street. But the actuality of cessation is, right, not compartmentalizable. It sneaks up on you. Well, that ought to do it.
I hope you feel better, Jeff.
No doubt. Yeah. I'm sure I will.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good night.
Rock and roll.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.